If you think you can't go from politics to the divine, Carol Gold and Steve Clark are about to take you above the fray. The only agenda here is to empower you to think for yourself, ask more questions, and trust your own truth. So now, the combination talk radio has been missing. Until now, Carol Gold and Steve Clark taking you above the fray.
Hi, I'm Carol Gold, and welcome to Above the Fray. The number here is 914-803-4522. Steve Clark and I are here for your entertainment, enjoyment, and enlightenment. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Carol.
Let's talk about leadership. And the reason I want to talk about leadership, Steve, is ironically, I have been watching West Wing. Now, I know this is not a current series on television, but I don't have cable. I don't watch television. I'm watching actually DVDs that I've rented from the library, taken out from the library. And I've become enthralled. I'm on season 6 of 7 seasons. And today, when I was checking the 7th season out of the library, the librarian who was checking it out said to me, "This is my favorite all-time series." And I said, "It is kind of compelling, isn't it?" And she said exactly what I had been thinking. She said, "Every time I go to the polls, I want to elect President Bartlet." Now, Steve, I don't know if you ever saw West Wing, did you?
Never saw it.
It's written by Aaron Sorkin. Aaron Sorkin has written several winning television shows. I don't know actually all of them. I guess we could look it up while we're on air and get some of those names. But he's huge, and he's big on dialogue, lots of talking, lots of backstories. And West Wing is the inside political story of Washington, D.C. It's based on a president who was a former governor, played by Martin Sheen. He has MS. The public doesn't know he has MS. He's elected twice. He's elected to a second term. His wife is a physician. And it is truly the backstory of Washington. I spent plenty of time in Washington, D.C. decades ago with a political action committee that I founded. And I spent a lot of time on the Hill. I knew personally senators and congressmen. And there is such a level of truth in this series. There's also, there's some agenda here. I mean, I'm sure Sorkin's a Democrat, although I have to say that the advisors on that show when it was being filmed were both Democrat and Republican, or allegedly Republican. Lawrence O'Donnell was one of them, and he's more socialist than he is anything else. But you do get both sides of the political story there. And it's really about the inner workings. It's about the deals they make and why they make them. And yet this president that is played by Martin Sheen is basically a very decent guy with a high ethical standard. And when you watch it, or I don't know, Steve, if you've ever seen American President with Michael Douglas.
I've not seen that either.
It's Michael Douglas and Annette Bening, and he also plays a very compelling U.S. president. You want these men to be your president because they have integrity, they have strength, they have intelligence. And I guess watching West Wing, what's happened is I've begun to ask myself, what's happened to leadership? Why don't we have any leaders? Where is the problem? And when we have people who seem like leaders, what happens to them when they go to Washington, D.C., and it appears that they lose their souls and they lose who they were when they were campaigning to get to Washington, D.C.? And I don't think, Steve, that this is an easy question with an easy answer, because I think there are, there are at least 3 or 4 sides of this story or this examination that come to my mind just as I'm speaking. I mean, I don't think we as the public are exempt from responsibility for the leaders that we have. I think the longer we put up with the corruption, the longer we have greed in our own lives and want our standard of living to stay the way it is at all costs, the more we become complicit in the leaders that we do have, and it's a slippery slope, because once you allow leaders to get away with corruption, you come all the way down that slope to where we have what we do now with the Clinton Foundation and the media. And it isn't just George Stephanopoulos, it now turns out. It's I think it was who's the one that wrote the story? He always does stories about World War II now, former anchor. Not Brian Williams.
Tom Brokaw?
Tom Brokaw contributed. Greta Van Susteren contributed. They contributed for access. They're not. I mean, Greta Van Susteren isn't contributing to the Clinton Foundation because she believes in democratic policies, or probably not even because it's a charitable organization. Because there have been questions all along about the inner workings of that charity and what it is they're really doing. But without focusing exclusively on the Clinton Foundation, I want to make the bigger point here, which is it's a slippery slope. And we've got corrupt private sector in bed with corrupt government, in bed with corrupt media, and it can get a little overwhelming. And I was asking myself today, what is leadership? What is it supposed to be? What should we be looking for? What standard should we hold leaders to? And if there is a standard, why don't we? And when did we stop? Or am I illusional or delusional? And did we never really have a standard? Have we always been somewhat sheep-like in our choices and allowing the limited choices that were given to be given us because there were always backroom deals? You know, there's a scene in West Wing where the president's chief of staff and one of his political advisors are talking, and the political advisor says to the chief of staff, you know, whatever happened to the backroom cigar-smoking deals where they picked the president? It was done, you know, in a back room with a bunch of cigar-smoking guys who decided who were the candidates were going to be. And the chief of staff looks at the political advisor and he says to him, well, those days are gone, but now it's you and me. We're the back room with the cigars, and we're the ones who pick. Because there's so much manipulation that goes on even in the process of getting a candidate on the ballot and then getting a candidate through the primary season. There's so much deal making there. And compromising of beliefs and values there, that I don't know that it's ever been anything other than an illusion when we look back and talk about the good old days of how things used to be, whether they were really better or not. So I would like to open a discussion, not just here on the show, I wish the nation would have a discussion about the qualities that we need in leadership, whether it's the CEO of a company or of a nonprofit or of the federal government, so that we have some standard that we can begin to judge, and I use that word and I mean it, judge people by, who say they have our best interest at heart. Steve, what are your thoughts around this?
I think what's happened is that with the amount of people that we now have in the country, I think it's just a different country. I think it's the big thing that I think is I think the leadership and the higher ups in the government have just realized that the European model in some ways works to get what they want. And what do I mean by that? I think if you look at how people vote, it's very hard to get a large blocks of voters together, and if you can do that, that gives you a huge base to move from. And so if you look at, say, again, just for argument's sake, if you look at the Democratic Party, they have very large blocks of people that they can rally. So they have the teachers unions, they have the police unions, they have the government unions, they have the workers unions, essentially that where you can essentially get, you can funnel dues into the government, to the Democratic Party, and it's easier to get those blocks, trade blocks of votes for them and get their votes. So that, I think, it contributes a large part to the corruption that takes place. And then I think what happens is that if you take away, you know, on the Republican side, it might be the bigger businesses, it might be corporate interests that are staking their claim for their votes and their interests. But then you have that's a huge swath of Americans that are independent. And because they're independent, they don't get their voices heard. There's plenty of people like myself, like yourself, I would say kind of the silent majority of Americans that are on the sidelines, that are individualistic, that want to lead their lives in a manner consistent with their beliefs. And there's not really anybody representing them anymore. And so it's people like those that are never going to really join a group, but are part of the political process and do vote. But because they don't really have they're not voting as a bloc, I think the politicians freeze them out and don't really give them their due. And so what happens is that when the elections take place, the big blocks of votes vote for the guys, and when the payments come due for those votes, those people get rewarded. Let's take it as a really specific example. You know, having lived in the Northeast, you can see by driving around, say for example in the New York or New Jersey areas, the state of roads, the state of equipment, the state of the school systems, the state of what the houses look like, and you realize, you know, people pay a lot of taxes there, and those taxes are essentially going in, paying back all the union workers, it's paying back all the payback. So if you want to take, you know, a dollar out of, you know, a sample dollar, you get 20 cents to this union, 20 cents to that union. You know, essentially the payoffs are paid off, and then you have the huge the pension liabilities. And the remaining set of money, which is supposed to go back into the community, never really gets there. So the people that actually need the money for the schools, for the roads, it never fully gets there. And so what you have is you have the worst. You have the worst part of government. You have none of the government functions are being taken care of, but the blocks of voters who elected them are being taken care of. And I think that's what the major problem is, Carol.
But, Steve, something has happened to us. Something has happened to the way, to what I guess I'll call, for lack of a better phrase, the American spirit. Something has happened to us as an electorate, and it took an ugly turn, and I guess it's since the 60s, and that's been a downward slope as well, and a slippery one. But the reason I say this is, if you look at the major cities, if you look at the major metropolitan areas, you look at Chicago, you look at Detroit, you look at Philadelphia, you look at Boston, maybe Boston's not right up there on the list, but you look at Baltimore, you look at D.C., these are cities that have been run by Democrats for decades and decades. And these are cities where some of the worst urban crimes, both in terms of actual crime occurrences, but also crimes against the city by complicit and corrupt governments, which are Democrat-run, where the cities have been left to deteriorate, to neglect, where the populations within the cities are predominantly minority and dependent on the state, and yet, that's a fact. You can look at that and look at those cities and look at how many decades Democratic principles have run those cities. So now we have a situation where we're going into a presidential election. We have Hillary Clinton representing the epitome of the progressive Democratic Party, where these policies are the highlight of their platform. And you've got people just waiting to get to the ballot box to reelect Hillary Clinton and more of these Democratic policies. And it was like today I heard Rand Paul had said that if he's going to run against Hillary Clinton and challenge her if he gets the nomination in Philadelphia, a predominantly black inner city Democrat forever city. And he said, and the reason is that because her husband, Bill Clinton, signed in 1994 the Violent Crime Control and Law Enforcement Act that gave states a fiscal incentive to enact tougher sentencing laws, which only hurt the African-American communities, such as Ferguson, where there are a substantially fewer number of black men than women because so many black men are incarcerated. Now, you can argue on the one hand that that's a problem of the black community, And why are so many of them incarcerated or committing crimes or disproportionately committing crimes or whatever? And I'm sure there is an argument on that side of the fence, so to speak. But there is undoubtedly an argument on the other side of the fence. I have an Hispanic woman cleans for me in my home. She comes every couple weeks, and we got to talking because I got a ticket coming back from Houston last week, coming back from the airport in Austin, and I was telling her the absurdity of why I got stopped. It wasn't for speeding, and she listened to my story and she said, "Do you know how many times I get stopped and my family members get stopped? Not because we were speeding and not because we were going through a red light, but because we're Hispanic, because of what we look like. We get stopped and then they look for a reason to give us a citation or a ticket." And so it's these minority communities that have suffered from, as Rand Paul says, democratic principles, both fiscally, but also in the case cited by Rand Paul about Bill Clinton's passing that 1994 Violent Crime Control Act, that yet people continue, and not just black people, because young people want to vote for Hillary Clinton too, and Jews vote for Hillary Clinton and will, and vote for Democrats. And as a Jew, I can't understand it, because there's no Democratic support in this administration for Israel. There's only support for Arab countries, it seems. And I know I'm off on a tangent here, but look at Ramadi and what just happened. I mean, our president is not outraged. Another Iraqi city has fallen. What are they, 15 miles or something from Baghdad? And nothing's happening, and I don't blame Obama. The public doesn't seem to care, Steve, which is where I started this tirade, which is something's happened to us. And I don't know if it's the slippery slope of dumbing down of society or whether it's we got too comfortable in our quality of life and the conveniences that we have here in the United States that we're used to. But we've gotten lazy, we've gotten apathetic, and we have unplugged from the process of governance. And in the end, we are the government. We the people are the government. That's how it was set up. Something's gone very wrong, and I'm deeply concerned. And you know me, Steve. I'm normally the optimist here, and I'm not saying that I'm not. I'm not saying that I don't believe that we'll pull it out of whatever low point we may have reached, but I am deeply concerned about the spirit of America.
You know, Carol, this is a question that I don't have an answer for, and I've been racking my brains for a long time. I heard a radio, host, years ago said the same, made the same point that you did. And essentially, where is the public on this? Where is the public? And I've wrestled, it's a question I've asked a long time. Where is the public on this? And I think we talked about it in the last show. I think, part of it is just, it's the education that people now get The general education system where people get their information is as much as we think otherwise, a large swath of the population still gets it from the schools, how they were educated, which is for the most part the textbooks are left-leaning. And then when they come out and they go out to the world and they get their news, they get it from the mainstream media. And then when they go to, watch TV or movies, it's always still the same narrative, and it would make it seem like there's no other narrative. I mean, the only thing that I could say that I remember when Rush Limbaugh came out in 1992, and he was such a hit right away, nobody could believe it was such a hit because it's finally a voice of the voiceless out there that nobody had heard some of these ideas. Well, they'd heard these ideas, but they never heard them on a public forum. And I think, I think what the newer generation, I'd say the millennials, know less or have a less of an understanding of what the country is like, what it's about. It's not that I'm so old or that you're so old anymore, but World War II now becomes a war that is just so much farther away from the general public, and events like that are historical events of what shaped this country. And what those events mean to this country and what this country is about, people no longer have that context anymore of what those things mean. And you combine it with really, I would say, a really poor educational system on top of it. And then I would say a lot of what goes for passed as truth on the media or on the TV shows, on the radio shows, is just absolute lies. You combine all those things together, I think that's what the crux of the problem is. And to make the last point, that I just think the only people that really will ever understand it is they just have to question the narrative. And I don't know if people, you know, are inclined to do that anymore. I just don't see that in people's eyes and faces. When my interactions with people, when I talk to them, I just don't see that they understand these issues anymore.
What I think the Republicans are not doing enough of, the Republicans have a very potent message, but they tend to couch it in economic terms. And this is what I mean. Republicans are rabidly about individualism. That's really their whole thing. When President Obama said, you know, you didn't make this, you know, nobody makes anything on their own, the Republicans railed against that, because every Republican business owner and it's people who believe in the free market and the capitalist system, at least the economic portion of it, they understand that a hardworking person in a capitalist and a free market society can get somewhere. And I think that message should not be limited to the economy and free markets. I think what we've been robbed of and what we've relinquished, and it's a little of both, is in fact the power of the individual. And so the brilliance of the Republican Party, or the Republican message, is the brilliance and the power of the individual. Now, the brilliance of the Democratic Party and its message is that, you know, united we stand, divided we fall. We are all aspects of one another. We're connected like branches on a tree. And we get a lot done sometimes, more so than we ever can alone, by joining with others. But the negative aspect of that message became socialism, becomes socialism and then communism. It eventually, that message overrides any sense of individualism, and it becomes a message of you're a nothing unless you're part of this whole, and this whole has a political correctness to it, and so you have to jump on board this ship in the right way, wearing the right clothes, having the same destination as everyone else, and you lose your individuality and thereby lose your creator self, the you that is a creator just as God is a creator. I mean, we're here as co-creators. That's what creativity and energy is all about, the correct use of energy. And so I think that because agendas, winning, greed, money, power, corruption have perverted both messages. There is truth in both messages. Do you see that? Am I clear what I'm trying to communicate, Steve?
Yeah, I think you're right. The message of individualism is a powerful one, and I think it resonates. The message resonates because that's what everybody wants. I mean, nobody wants to be spied on for the most part. I think the message is consistent. We want. I think most Americans want individual freedom and individual liberties. And I think the fact that you make this point and that the Republicans don't do it is telling. But I think the other message that is equally important is that it's the individuals are against government programs, not because we don't want to help people. It's just because they don't help people. At the end, you know, it's like a really poorly run charity. Americans give their money to the government. The government wastes it, and the people who really need the money get cents on the dollar. You know, 2-3 cents on the dollar. And that help that we could be giving to people that definitely, you know, everybody in life has issues, and they'll have our moments of need. that those, you know, we could help them in a different format or in a different way or in an individual way we could be helping those people. And I think that's a message that, for whatever reason, is definitely lacking.
Well, you know, we started the show with leadership, and it occurred to me just now while you were talking that I would think one of the most important signs of leadership is to unite. I know that early in my life, when I had positions of power, I had a tendency to divide. I had a tendency to dictate. I had a tendency to a very strong personality, and I had a tendency to abuse authority when I had authority within my grasp. And I learned through trial and error that if you want to be a good leader, you have to learn how to bring people to the table and not cause them to be separate, not cause them to see the other as an adversary. And so, to me, one of the most damaging things that President Obama has done in his years in office is to further divide this country. And I do believe that he was instrumental in that. He somehow, I mean, it's a fundamental quality and character of leadership that he lacks. He doesn't seem to know how to bring people together. He not only polarized the Congress, he polarized the nation. He polarized races, he polarized economic strata, and I guess that's what we ought to be looking at going into 2016, is not who can be a better dictator, who can demand that the country straighten itself out and grow the national police force and bring martial law to the states, but what candidate can reunite us? Because from where we are, we're either going to find our way back to reunion or we're going to find ourselves in some version of civil war. I really believe that, and I'm optimistic that we will find our way back, but I do believe we're at a critical point, and it's just something that has been playing on my mind these last few days watching West Wing. Is that how come we know how to write these stories, but we don't seem to know how to live them? And I guess that's a thought that I'll end the show with, Steve, and let you, you know, if you have any thoughts that you want to add to this, please go ahead.
No, I think you did just everything delightful tonight, delightfully, so I'm fine.
Well, we want to thank you again for listening to Above the Fray podcast. We truly come here from our hearts with as much intelligence as we can muster based on our own life experiences and trying to stay aware and alert to what's going on in the world. And we encourage you to do the same, to, of course, come here and continue to spread the word about Above the Fray. We may not have answers. We certainly can raise questions. And in doing so, you, the listener, may have answers, and we also encourage you to call in and share your thoughts with us in future shows. Steve and I are here every Monday and Thursday evening. Our time may vary when we're live, but archived, you can always get us, and you can always share with others our archived shows. So I want to thank you, as always, for listening to Above the Fray. I'm Carol Gold.
I'm Steve Clark.
And you've been listening to Above the Fray podcast. Have a great week, everybody. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Above the Fray with Carol Gold and Steve Clark, from politics to the divine. Thanks for being a part of a new way to see the world. Visit our website at AboveTheFrayPodcast.com and like us on our Facebook fan page, Facebook.com/AboveTheFrayPodcast. This has been Carol Gold and Steve Clark, taking you always above the fray.